Save me, O God, cries the psalmist in today's psalm, number 69. I sink in deep mire where there is no standing. I am come into deep waters where the floods overflow me. They that hate me are more than the hairs of mine head. They that would destroy me are mighty. How does God respond to the psalmist's plight? I am weary of my crying. My throat is dried. Mine eyes fail while I wait for my God. The theme of suffering is frequent in the Psalms. Mine enemies would daily swallow me up, complains the psalmist. Also frequent is the apparent indifference of God. Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Why art thou so far from helping me? The psalmist seems steadfast in his faith nonetheless. But I wonder. In this psalm, he admits his own weakness. O God, thou knowest my foolishness, and my sins are not hid from thee. What foolishness might that be? Psalm 14 and the nearly identical Psalm 53 suggest an answer. The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. Psalm 69 gestures to what philosophers and theologians call the problem of evil. How can it be that there is a God who loves us if he permits us to suffer so much, whether from the natural disasters of floods, earthquakes, tempests, and other so-called acts of God, as well as disease and famine, or from the evils of men, hate, criminality, slavery, persecution, and war? Is the fool so unreasonable in his conclusion? Might not our search for God lead us to conclude that there is nothing to be found? The psalmist expresses a concern that many since have had about what happens when people give up the search for the divine. The Lord looked down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there were any that did understand and seek God. Without an all-powerful and all-knowing God who sees and is ready to punish our misdeeds, what reason do we have to do good rather than wrong? In his Republic, Plato mentions the mythical Ring of Gyges, a precursor to Tolkien's One Ring, which makes its wearer invisible. The character of Glaucon, Plato's brother, asks whether any person is by nature so just that were they able to commit crimes without fear of detection or punishment, they would forego such an opportunity. It would be dispiriting to think that ethical behavior is really motivated by concern for one's reputation or by fear of retribution, whether divine or human. The evidence is that humans, on the whole, do have a modest impulse towards benevolence when they can trust others to behave likewise. But when that trust is broken, benevolence is replaced by fear and loathing. The precarity of morality is a reasonable and troubling concern. Another deeper concern about the relationship between God and the good is raised by Plato in the Euthyphro in the form of a dilemma. Leibniz puts it this way: it is generally agreed that whatever God wills is good and just. But there remains the question whether it is good and just because God wills it, or whether God wills it because it is good and just. The first horn of the dilemma makes morality arbitrary. God could have chosen to will that we are always mean and spiteful. In which case those things would be good. On the other hand, if God wills what is good because it is good, then God is answerable to something else. Morality itself constrains God. Leibniz preferred that horn of the dilemma. God is indeed constrained by the eternal and necessary truths. God could not will murder to be right any more than God could will 2 + 2 = 5. Even so, there remains a mystery. If morality does not come from God, from where does it come then? To say that morality does not come from God but precedes God is to say that morality is what it is, whether or not God exists. Imagine then a world without God, the world as the psalmist's fool takes it to be. That world is a world, as Democritus put it, of atoms and the void. Atoms have no morality. Configuring combinations of atoms cannot conjure up morality where there was none before. And since we human beings are just complex arrangements of atoms, our existence cannot, per se, bring morality into existence. It is true that we do naturally have feelings of benevolence towards others, but these, we have noted, are highly contingent. It is plausible that they exist not because we each have some grasp of the good, but because contingent benevolence is an evolved trait, an adaptive strategy for a social animal. David Hume taught us that you cannot derive an ought from an is. No amount of factual description is enough on its own to determine what is right and what is wrong. But the scientific world picture just is a picture only of is's. It contains no oughts. Perhaps then, the world contains no God and no morality. Maybe both are illusions. Considering that possibility can induce a sense of helpless vertigo as one peers over the cliff into the abyss of a morality-free world. Worse still, might not others come to this conclusion too? If people rejected not just belief in God, but belief in the existence of moral truths also, would not the consequence be that life for all of us will turn out to be, in the notorious words of one Jonian philosopher, nasty, bootish, and short? I suggest that people are disposed to have an unconscious anxiety about morality. Deepest and darkest is the fear that there might be no morality at all. But even if there is right and wrong, the moral behavior of others is undependable, liable to be quickly cast aside. This anxiety is one of the prompts for the human search for the divine. Immanuel Kant admitted that there is no proof of the existence of God. Instead of knowledge, there is faith. And we must have faith, since we have to hope that there will be justice. We see that the wicked can prosper to the detriment of the righteous in this world. To make this bearable, we need to look forward to a world in which, as the psalmist says, upon the wicked he shall rain snares, fire, and brimstone, and an horrible tempest. This shall be the portion of their cup. For the righteous Lord loveth righteousness. His countenance doth behold the upright. Our unconscious anxiety that justice will not be done, and that what morality there is might crumble, that there might even be no such thing as morality, is an inchoate fear that is not suited to precise philosophical analysis. We have to hope that there is some source of morality, whatever that might be, and that this morality will be enforced, justice will be done, and virtue rewarded. This disquiet is one strand of the human search for God, fueling our hope that there is indeed a benevolent and powerful God. My tears have been my meat day and night, while they continually say unto me, Where is thy God? When I remember these things, I pour out my soul in me, for I have gone with the multitude. I went with them to the house of God with the voice of joy and praise, with the multitude that kept holy day. Why art thou cast down, O my soul? And why art thou disquieted in me? Hope thou in God.